Okay, let's call this thing in session. My name is Michael Bednarik. I am a candidate in Austin, Texas for the Texas Legislature. I'm running for District 47 against Terry Teal, who's the incumbent, and I am a Libertarian candidate. Yay! I have been very distraught with the state of government and general affairs in the United States for a long time, and I have felt very frustrated. Going out to vote in November didn't seem like much of an accomplishment, and so I've been looking to do more. Well, when the Libertarian Party called and asked me to run for office, that was definitely something that I could do. Now, I may or may not be successful, but that feeling of helplessness disappeared. I mean, completely. It has given me an avenue, someplace where I can devote a lot of this energy that I have. Well, one of the things that I have done was I've come up with an 8-hour class on the Constitution. July, 4th of July, we will be celebrating 225 years of independence from Great Britain. I've taken that 25 years of history and kind of condensed it into an 8-hour introductory class. Well, you guys have given me 2 hours tonight, so it's, shrunk a little bit more. So my class is called An Introduction to the Constitution. It basically just covers the highlights. My purpose with my 8-hour class is to bring people basically up to speed, psychologically slap them back and forth, wake them up a little bit, and say, this is the Constitution. This is what it says. And I pass out copies of the Constitution, which they, can then read. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out very quickly that, what the people in Washington are doing has nothing to do with this document. I mean, basically, that's where the problem is. So, as an instructor or a speaker, it's basically my responsibility to know my audience. And I want to apologize because I didn't realize what level my audience was going to be. I didn't talk to Bill very much, but he just said we had this group of patriots, and I thought, well, okay, this guy should at least be sympathetic. When I walked in and found out that everybody had the same sentiments that I do about the IRS, I'm going, oh my gosh, this is probably should be an advanced level class, so I'm not necessarily prepared for that. But what I would like to do is I would like to spend a little bit of time and go through the basics. Now, most of you, I assume, are going to know much of this stuff, but anytime you have a basketball team or a sports team and they start not doing well, the coach always goes back to the fundamentals. If you're basketball, you got to learn how to dribble. You got to do the simple things before you can do the fancy stuff. So, on page 2, I've got basically a quick timeline for what I'd hope to cover. I have so much to say that squeezing it into 2 hours, we got no problem going over. And usually the people in my class, again, are not as experienced as you are. And so what I generally tell them is that I am an iconoclast. My purpose in that class is to shatter their widely held beliefs about what they think the United States is. And most of the time, I do that. I don't think anybody here is going to be shocked because you're all pretty well up to speed. But I had one woman we stopped for a coffee break, and I like my students to get up and walk around because I want the blood to be circulating. It's hard to sit for 8 hours and stay awake the whole time. And so I want people to walk around during the coffee break. And she was sitting there, and I asked her to stand up and, please circulate a little bit. She goes, I don't think I can. She goes, I'm nauseous. When people start to learn this stuff for the first time, if you hit them with it in one day, it's incredibly overwhelming. It's scary to think that we have come this far. But Dr. Benjamin Rush said back in 1786 that education is favorable to liberty. Freedom can only exist in the society of knowledge. Without learning, men are incapable of knowing their rights. And where learning is confined to a few people, Liberty can neither be equal nor universal. So my job, and what I would like you guys to think is your job, is to educate our friends and neighbors and tell them basically what is going on. Now, most of the time, they're not going to believe us.
True.
I mean, they think that we are, you know, right-wing wackos. But all you have to do is just give them a copy of the Declaration of Independence and say, read this. Have you actually read the Declaration of Independence? It is an incredibly beautiful document. It is a letter to King George telling him to pound sand where the sun doesn't shine. But it's a beautiful document. Now, when we are talking about government, and especially the U.S. government and liberty and things like that, we have to know the basics, the fundamentals. Now, in this debate or this discussion, the fundamentals, the key, is the difference between rights and privileges. If you don't understand or grasp the difference between a right and a privilege, it's pointless to talk about anything else. I mean, basically because you're swinging in the dark. A right is something that you are born with. It is inherent in you. If I had a red ball up here, the color red is inherent in that ball. I can't take red out of the ball. It's basically a part of that object that I'm holding. Your rights are a part of you. They're a little bit like the dreams that you had last night. You can tell me what your dreams were, but you can't give them to me. I mean, they're a part of who you are. Your thought process, all of that is inherent in you. And your rights are part of you because you have a heart in your chest and your lungs are breathing and you're alive. That's all you need, you know, to have rights. A right is defined as a power, privilege, faculty, or demand inherent in one person and incident upon another, generally defined as the powers of free action. Now, my definition of a right is something that you can do without asking somebody else for permission. You don't have to go to a higher authority to get permission. Now, a privilege is something which is the exact opposite. A privilege is defined in Black's Law Dictionary as a particular and peculiar benefit or advantage enjoyed by a person, company, or class beyond the common advantages of other citizens. A peculiar right, advantage, exemption, power, franchise, or immunity held by a person or class not generally possessed by others. My definition is that it's something that somebody gives you. A privilege is granted. Now, the scenario that I generally use is if I walk out the back door of my house onto my land, I can walk back and forth across my land as often as I want. Do I have to ask anybody for permission? Do I have to call you on the phone and say, is it okay if I just kind of like walk out to the South 40? Now, I am able to do that because it is my property. If I want to travel to the grocery store and the grocery store is just on the other side of your property, can I walk back and forth to the grocery store across your property anytime I want? No. I have to get permission. Now, if we're next door neighbors and we know each other pretty well, you know, I probably don't have to call you every morning before I do that. It basically is an established privilege. However, it is a privilege. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you may allow me to walk across your land. And because you woke up on the wrong side of the bed Thursday morning, you say, no, damn it, walk around. A privilege is something which is granted by a higher authority, and it can also be revoked. That privilege can be taken away at any time. Now, where do privileges come from? Privileges derive from property. In my example, I can walk back and forth across my land because it's my property. I own it. I can't walk across your property because I don't own it. Now, we say, well, that doesn't apply to, you know, the right to life. Well, I think it does. I have a right to life. Who owns my body? I do. I have to own my body. To suggest that I don't own it is to imply that somebody else owns it. And if somebody else owns my body, then what am I?
A slave.
A slave. So, you know, a baby that's 1 hour old already has property, himself or herself. So that's where your right to life comes from, is the fact that you own your own body. Now, if I own this land, can I build a house on it? Yeah.
You get a permit.
And the problem is that we say in theory. Now, when I teach this, you know, basic class, nobody questions that, okay? Because they're just kind of like waking up. It's like, well, yeah, of course, okay? Now, your comment about, well, yeah, in theory, is acknowledging the fact that when you, right in the real world, the way things actually happen, you have to go out and get a permit for this and a permit for that and an inspector to look up, you know, this and that and the other thing. Why is that? Why do we have to get all these permits?
Because you don't really own it.
You don't really own your land. The fact of the matter is that rights still derive from property. But you don't own the property. Believe it or not. If you go out and you buy a house, what type of an agent do you look for? A real estate agent. What is the definition of real estate? Real estate is everything from the ground up. You may pay, you know, $100,000 for the building, but if you read the fine print, you don't own the dirt that it sits on. If you owned the land itself, that would be called allodial title. How many people have heard allodial title? This, yeah, not surprising with this group. Most of my students haven't. Then they go, well, how do you spell that? And they're writing all this stuff down. So, if you own the land in allodial title, it is yours. You own the mineral rights. If you want to drill a damn oil well, go for it. It's your land. And so what usually surprises the beginners is if I want to build a house on it, I can. It's my property, my lumber. I can do whatever I want, nail it together. Then 2 weeks later, I can look at that house and go, well, that really sucks. I don't like that. And then I ask them, can I take that house down board by board? And they usually say, yeah. And I say, well, can I burn the house down? They say, no, that's arson. Like, who owns it? It's mine. If I had all that lumber there and I just wanted to, you know, stack it up and, you know, burn it like they do at, you know.
Bonfire.
Yeah, bonfire. What difference does it make if it's, you know, in a stack or built into a house?
Not enough baggies there.
Yeah. So, the important thing is, as long as I own it, as long as I have complete allodial title to it, I can do anything I want. Now, somebody says, well, yeah, you can burn down the next guy's barn. That's a different story. I am responsible for all my actions. You know, if I'm not watching where I go and I step on your toe, I have to, you know, I have to apologize and say I'm sorry. If the ashes or embers from my fire go and burn down your barn, you know, I better be prepared to build you a new barn. So, a right derives from property. Anytime you're in a debate and you're asking, oh my gosh, well, who's got the right to do this or that and the other thing, the question that you should ask is, who owns it? As soon as you figure out the, you know, the allodial title holder, the answer is solved. They have complete and total rights to do anything they want. Anybody else has to get permission. Now, the end of this, I'm going to be leading into the fact that I don't have a driver's license or a license plate. I was told that was kind of a key issue for this group. So I will get into that. But basically, most of us do not hold allodial title in our automobile. Okay, I suspect most of this group knows that you have to have the MSO, the Manufacturer's right. Statement of Origin. The certificate of title is not the title. The way that I explain that to people is, if I give you a gift certificate, do you have the gift or a piece of paper that represents that gift?
Piece of paper.
You just got the piece of paper, and you got to take the gift certificate down to a redemption center someplace to get whatever the prize is. Well, if they hand you a certificate of title, do you have the title or a piece of paper representing that title? I mean, it's really simple when you break it down, but most people just don't think that they've never occurred to them that any of this stuff is true. So a right has another function, or there's a property to it, and that is that with every right, there is an inherent responsibility. You cannot have a right without a responsibility, and conversely, you cannot be given a responsibility without having an inherent right. They are opposite sides of the same coin. If you have a coin, one is heads, one is tails, one side is tails, and you can't have one without the other. So, if you have a right, you have a responsibility to exercise that right without violating someone else's right. Does a six-year-old have a right to life? Yes. I mean, nobody would disagree with that. Does a six-year-old have a right to keep and bear arms? Well, most of it get pretty little bit uncomfortable with that. Why do we not typically allow a six-year-old to walk around with a loaded gun?
No responsibility.
Because they don't have the responsibility. They're not conscious enough, or they don't have the experience to understand that death is permanent. It's not like in the cartoons where you can be the coyote and fall off the cliff, and keep on going. Life is not like that. Death is permanent. And a six-year-old doesn't understand that. So it's not that the six-year-old doesn't have a right, he just doesn't have the responsibility to exercise that right. Now, when does that come along? Well, it arrives in different times for different people. I mean, I've seen 13-year-olds that were very responsible, very adult, and I would have no problem with them walking around with a rifle or a pistol. On the other hand, I've seen people who are 45 years old that I don't really trust behind the wheel of a car. I question whether they've got a single synapse working in their head. So responsibility and intelligence is different for different people, and it depends on how responsible a person is. So what I want to try to do is emphasize the difference between rights and privileges and point out that the Bill of Rights and the Constitution do not give you your rights. I mean, I hear this phrase all the time, constitutional rights this, constitutional rights that. I hate that phrase. Why? Because people hear the phrase constitutional rights and they automatically assume that the Constitution has given them a right to freedom of religion, has given them the right to keep and bear arms. That's nonsense. If somebody gave it to you, it's a privilege. Your rights precede the Constitution, and they precede the Bill of Rights. And John Dickinson said in 1766 that kings or parliaments could not give rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and the Lord of all earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. So, I am strongly in favor of the Constitution, but it doesn't give me anything. And I'm very, very quick to point that out to people. I want to talk, I'm going to go through the next few pages pretty quickly, just based on people who are here. I want to talk about the concept of sovereignty. Sovereignty is a word which it describes the source of power. Now, when we think of sovereign, we typically think of a sovereign king. King George was a sovereign king. Now, where did he get all of that power? Well, the theory was that this was the divine right of kings. Somewhere along the process, I don't know where, God came down with a little magic wand, smacked some guy in the head, and he had all of the property.
Old Testament.
Okay? He was the king and could do anything. Because he owned everything. Can you imagine owning all of England? It's my property, and you're standing on it?
But not only that, everyone in it was his property.
Everybody in it was his property as well. Anybody living on the king's property was called a subject. How did the king make laws? They just write a proclamation. You know, this is the new law, signed the king. Yeah, nail it up on a tree, have everybody going and shouting it through the towns. You know, you make a proclamation. It's the law. The law lives on his tongue. Did you have a right to, or do you have a vote in the law? Do you have a, is that, well, wait a minute, king, I don't like that. You know? He had two choices, either do it the king's way or dance at the end of a rope. Now, we had all these people in England. A lot of them came to North America, and we settled along the eastern coast of North America and set up all these colonies. We were British. We drank tea. We were happy that the king was protecting us. Well, eventually, after excessive taxes and taxation without representation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we wrote King George a letter, a.k.a. the Declaration of Independence, and said, we don't need a king, right? Because in England, the king had all of the rights. The people only had privileges. I'm going to allow you to be the royal blacksmith. I'm going to let you be the royal candlestick maker. You're going to be allowed to be the royal baker. You can only do what you were doing with permission. And if I don't like the way you're doing it, then I'm going to take that permission away. So everything that you had was granted by permission of the king. You had no allodial title to anything. We came to North America, we wrote the Declaration of Independence, said, you know, we're going to cut out the middleman. You know, this king BS, none of that. We are going to get all of our rights directly from God. That all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Now, for those of you, it is not inalienable, it is unalienable. Inalienable means you should not take them away. Unalienable means you cannot take them away. And I prefer to pronounce it unalienable. If you have a house and you take out a mortgage with the bank will loan you money and they put a lien on your property. Is it still your house? Yes. Can you sell the house? Not until you satisfy the lien. The lien is a condition, a legal condition. An unalienable right is a right that the government cannot put conditions on. Do you have freedom of religion if you are Protestant, Catholic, or Jewish? No. You can be any damn religion you want. Do you have freedom to keep and bear arms if it's, you know, not an assault rifle and not a, you know, Saturday night special? No. You can have any damn gun you want. Can you walk down to the bank and make an unauthorized withdrawal? No. That goes with the rights and responsibilities. You have a right to protect your property. As long as your property's not being, you know, violated, then you just sit there and keep your mouth shut. So you don't have an unlimited right to just walk around and shoot out the lights. Now, when we wrote the Declaration of Independence, we didn't say so explicitly, but basically we were becoming sovereign citizens. The Constitution says, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, etc. We the people ordain and establish the Constitution. We the people are sovereign. We have all the power. When we created the Constitution, we created Congress. We invented it, just the way we'd go out in the back 40 and build a barn. So if we the people create Congress, who works for who? Do they work for us or do we work for them?
They work for us,
supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, when you talk about it like that, I mean, the answer is pretty well obvious. They are supposed to work for us. Is that the way it works? Can anybody name one thing that the federal government doesn't feel authorized to come in and mess with your life about? Not a single thing. There are all sorts of things that they tell you that, you know, you can't do. And we, sovereign citizens, go, okay, we're just going to sit here and, you know, just like sheep.
Lack of education.
It's a lack of education. Absolutely.
On purpose.
And this is, when I teach the 8-hour class, every person gets a copy of the Constitution, and this is about a 60-page handout. That I use. It's just a detailed outline. So it obviously has several things that your little handout does not. Daniel Webster has a quote, and it says, "I apprehend no danger to our country from a foreign foe. Our destruction, should it come at all, will be from another quarter, from the inattention of the people to the concerns of their government. From their carelessness and negligence, I must confess that I do apprehend some danger. I fear they may place too implicit a confidence in their public servants and fail properly to scrutinize their conduct, that in this way they may be made the dupes of designing men and become the instruments of their own undoing. Make them intelligent, and they will be vigilant. Give them the means of detecting the wrong, and they will apply the remedy." Okay, he said that in 1837. And so that's the purpose of my class. You know, people say, well, what do you want us to do? I said, I don't care. I don't care what you do after this class. All I'm doing is I'm giving you the Constitution. I'm telling you what it says. What you feel obligated to do after that is up to you. If you want to go home and watch Gong Show, you know, go ahead. You have the right to do that. You know, but I can't do that. I can't sit back knowing all the stuff that I know and just let it happen. My mother is literally terrified. I mean, she was moderately impressed when I announced that I was running for office. You go, oh, that would be nice. You know, my son, the politician. You know. And I go to the Capitol. I've been to the Capitol for several pro-gun rallies. And I get up there in front of a crowd of 1,000. I say, I will not turn over my weapons to any state or federal agency, period. And she goes, oh my God, you didn't say that in public. I said, yes, I said that. And she goes, well, you know, like, what if they, you know, like, make trouble for you? They're already making trouble for me. What happened in Germany? Did Adolf Hitler just suddenly take office on Monday and start putting Jews in the ovens on Friday? No. It was a gradual process. First thing he did was start writing newspaper articles, and everything that went wrong was the Jews' fault. Did anybody do anything? Did anybody write any rebuttals? Well, no. What the heck? Sticks and stones may break my bones, etc., etc. Then he said, well, all the Jews have to have a six-pointed star so we can identify you. Did anybody protest? No. They said, well, it's a religious symbol. It's our star. I mean, we're happy. We should be glad to walk around with God's star on our shirt. Then there was Kristallnacht, one night where the German soldiers went through and broke all the windows in all of the Jewish businesses. And Kristallnacht is German for night of glass, because the sidewalks were just covered with glass. Did anybody do anything? Well, you know, we don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to piss off anybody. Well, then they're putting them on the train cars and taking them out of town. Where do you think you're going? Vacation? How bad does it have to get? By the time they're walking you in naked into the ovens, you go, well, wait a minute, I don't like this. You know, like, shut up. I don't want that to happen in my country. I love my country. I may die saying the things that I say. I know that if I start getting death threats, I'm doing the right thing. Because I'm finally pissing off people who, you know, like, give a shit. But it's not going to stop me. I tell my mother, they can kill me, but they can't scare me. Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. He wasn't sugarcoating it. So, we in the United States are sovereign citizens. We have all the power. It's about time we stood up and acted like it. After the Declaration of Independence was written, there's a whole new system. People didn't quite understand. I mean, what do you really mean by that? William Pitt went back to England. He went to London, went and stood before the House of Commons, and he was explaining it to them. And he said, the poorest man may in his cottage bid defiance to all the forces of the crown. Can you imagine bidding defiance to the king? Say, no, we're not going to do that? Off with his head. So the poorest man may bid defiance to all the forces of the crown. We're talking about the cottage. He says, it may be frail. Its roof may shake. The wind may blow through it. The storms may enter. The rain may enter. But the king of England cannot enter. All his forces dare not cross the threshold of the ruined tenement. Everybody hear the expression, a man's home is his castle? That's what we're talking about. It doesn't mean that, oh, I've got this really great recliner so I can watch the Super Bowl. It means that every man and woman in the United States is a king or queen. I can make any law I want inside my house. It has no authority over in your house next door. You can make any law that you want. You can do anything you want as long as you're not violating someone else's rights. That's what rights and privileges are. You don't have to ask for permission. I can stand there on the sidewalk and go, God, that's really stupid. Go for it. You know? Anybody here not know that smoking is bad for your health? You want to smoke? Hey, whose property is it? You want to burn down that, you know, building on your land? Do it. It's yours. You want to put all that stuff into your lungs and destroy your body? Hey, go for it. I will fight to the death your right to do anything you want with your property. Now, don't try to make me smoke, but... So... The next question is basically a discussion question. We're not going to waste too much time with this group. But it is, if we the people are sovereign, do we have the authority to violently overthrow the government if necessary?
That's why we got guns.
That's why we've got guns. And that's why I will never turn mine over.
They didn't give them to us to go hunting with. That was not the purpose.
Second Amendment is the most sacred amendment to me. Because it protects all of the others. As soon as you lose the Second Amendment, you have freedom of speech. Sit down and shut up. It's like, what the heck are you going to do? So, I remind people that the United States started in 1755 when the British soldiers came to Lexington and Concord to get our guns and gunpowder. And we stood at the bridge and said, no, you won't. That was the shot heard around the world. Texas started in 1835 when the Mexican soldiers wanted to take back the cannon. And we put up a great big flag and said, come and take it. You want it? So that was how Texas started. Everything with independence deals around guns. If you ain't got them, you're pretty much screwed. So, I usually go through and do a whole lot on the obvious controversies and contradictions here. The Second Amendment says I have a right to keep and bear arms. Well, if I have a right, why do I have to get a concealed carry permit? I mean, isn't that a contradiction in terms? I have to get permission to exercise a right?
You have to be.
I mean, how does the government get away with that?
They got more guns than we do.
Yeah, but there are a lot more of us than there are of them.
Actually, they don't.
So, If they did have more guns than we did, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. If I have a right to travel, why do I have to have a driver's license? Why do I have to get permission to exercise a right? And that's where we're going to end up. And how many people here have a marriage license?
This is my favorite issue.
Oh, this is the one that really makes kind of people just kind of seize up. You just kind of like watch the smoke coming from their ears as they start thinking. A license is permission. If you've got a marriage license, who gave you permission? And what if? And what did they give you permission for? How did they get the authority to give you permission?
We gave it to them.
Well, we basically acquiesced to it. They took it, and we didn't fight them back. And does anybody know where? Well, let me ask this: did George Washington have a marriage license?
Yep.
Thomas Jefferson?
Yep.
They said, "Hey, Martha, you want to live together, make babies?" You know, they build a cabin and they go for it. Well, somewhere between then and now, there must have been a first marriage license somewhere. Where did the first marriage license come into existence?
First mixed marriage, black and white.
Okay.
Permission was
after the Civil War. The 13th Amendment makes blacks and whites the same. They're free, right? So if they're the same, well then, you know, we're just like, everybody's okay. Well, if that's true, why did they write the 14th Amendment to give blacks privileges that the whites had? The whites had right. A black had privileges. It was granted. So can two white people get married? Yes, they have a right to do anything they want. Can two black people get married? Yeah, we really didn't care. As far as we were concerned, it was like animal husbandry. But if you have a black person and a white person and they want to get married, oh my gosh. I mean, we can't allow that to happen, can we? And the black person doesn't have a right to get married. They have to get permission. And so guess what? The black person had to get a marriage license. They get permission to marry the white person. And that worked so well, we just gradually extended that to everybody. So a marriage license is basically a contract. How many people or entities are involved in a marriage license?
Three.
The man, the woman, and the state. The state has a vested interest in this legal contract and the outcome from it. What is the typical outcome of a marriage?
Children.
So the state has a vested... What was it? I'm sorry.
You've been at a divorce.
No.
Oh, I thought he said a horse.
So when the state has a vested interest in the outcome, they own part of your children. That's why they can decide, oh, you're an unfit parent, and come in and take the children away from you.
Well, when you get the birth certificate, you seal the deal.
That's right. So if you've got a birth certificate and a marriage license, that's prima facie evidence that you have given the state the permission to do everything that it's doing. And I am so thrilled. I have a lady friend in San Antonio. She's getting married in the end of September. She and her husband are not getting a marriage license. I'm so thrilled. And so they're making up their own vows and their own thing. And they have asked me to be kind of the master of ceremonies. I'm not an official. All I'm going to do is just read the stuff. And I'm very, very thrilled and proud about that. So the word is getting out.
How do you avoid not getting a marriage license?
Don't ask for one.
What if
have you ever heard of a common law marriage? What's a common law marriage?
All marriages were common law.
Two people just lived together.
Well, yeah.
You did it in the church. You got the grace of the
yeah.
church.
Right.
And the preacher didn't go through all this crap of licenses. It becomes a contract between you and the female. I assume it's a female in your case. But a female. And you say your dues. That becomes a contract. You have the witnesses. They sign a piece of paper. It used to be the Bible, but you can do it in
yeah.
a contract form. You're married in everybody's eyes, including the state.
Yeah.
So you got a certificate of marriage from your church.
Actually, all the records were kept in the family Bible.
Yeah.
All the births, all the deaths, and marriages.
All you had to do was just record it. And as long as it was written down, it was official.
There's some other aspects about the state license. When you request a license for marriage, you actually, once you sign that, you actually admit that you're incompetent under the law.
Yes.
And
yes.
You have to have an overseer, which is the state agrees mm-hmm. to oversee you because you're incompetent.
Right.
And Black's Law says that incompetency, to be incompetent means you're a legal idiot.
Yes.
So you're not in control of your affairs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, why do we have any government at all? I mean, why even bother?
The people think they need something to make
okay.
Things.
Well, what is?
We did say some certain things.
What is the stated purpose of government in the Declaration of Independence?
To secure our rights.
To secure our rights. Any, as long as in this hypothetical situation where we all just love everybody and we're all just hugging and singing kumbaya, the government has no job. They should be sitting there twiddling their thumbs. Okay? The government doesn't have anything to do unless I back over your mailbox and go, oh! So instead of you coming out and putting a bullet in my head, the government comes in and goes, okay, mailbox, what's that? About $75, you know, fix the mailbox and it's done. The only purpose of government, the only valid purpose of government, is to protect your rights. When any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. What does abolish mean? Scrap it and start from scratch. We created Congress. When I was a boy, my father used to tell me, I brought you into this world, I can take you out. And that's what we need to tell Congress. Like, we created you, you work for us. So, George Washington said very eloquently that government is not reason. It is not eloquence. It is force. And like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. Any government, whatever form of government you want to talk about, is presumed to be the authorized use of force. I can't grab my gun and go out and shoot somebody, but the government can send agents out to establish justice or to make sure that justice is done. Now, where that power is organized determines what type of government you have. If one person has all of the power, that's a monarchy.